Okay, good morning, everyone. So last week, we began discussing the purpose of mitzvos in general, and we began with a number of psukim that highlight that the purpose of mitzvos is for us, l'tov lach. We considered the Maharal's idea that perhaps we shouldn't look at mitzvos that way. Mitzvos should be viewed as an ol, and there was a debate exactly how to understand the Gemara concerning Shiluach HaKein in light of this discussion. So there's two topics relating to this that I'd like to discuss today. The first one, which we already alluded to last week, is a stira between the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim and the Rambam in Mishneh Torah. Just to recall, the Mishneh Brachos told us that HaOmer if a person attributes the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein to God's mercy upon the birds, so then we silence him. And the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim was troubled by that Mishnah and the Gemara's explanation, because after all, the Rambam feels that the reason for the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein is in fact because God has compassion and mercy on the mother bird. So what's wrong with that statement? And the Rambam answered that the Mishnah reflects one perspective, a perspective in Chazal that we should not look for reasons for mitzvos. We should simply say that mitzvos are chukim, laws, divine dictates from God that we should do regardless of the reason. But we, the Rambam says, don't accept that view. We accept the idea that all mitzvos have reasons, and not only that, but to the extent possible, a person should search and try to understand the reasons for mitzvos. And therefore, essentially what the Rambam is saying in Mor Nevuchim is, well, we don't paskin like that Mishnah. That Mishnah is not our position. Our position is mitzvos have reasons. And not only that, but the reason for Shiluach HaKein is the compassion and concern for the mitzvah, for the bird. So, having read the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, what would you expect him to say in the Mishneh Torah? You'd expect him to omit this Mishnah. But in fact, he does the exact opposite. He paskins the Mishnah. Now, on the one hand, I guess we would also expect him to paskin the Mishnah, because it is, as we noted last time, a Stam Mishnah. There doesn't seem to be any machlokas. But that leaves us with a stira between the Mor Nevuchim and the Mishneh Torah. And the Mor Nevuchim, he tells us that the reason for the mitzvah is God's concern for the pain of the animal. And in the Mishneh Torah, that is not the reason for the mitzvah. In Mor Nevuchim, he says that's the reason for the mitzvah. And in the Mishneh Torah, He says, fakert. So let's take a look at what he actually says in the Mishneh Torah. We'll read it carefully and we'll try to understand the Rambam's position. And as I think we'll see, I hope at least, our analysis here will help us generally understand seeming contradictions between Mishneh Torah and Mor Nevuchim and help us learn how to relate to Mor Nevuchim, how to deal with that sefer. The Mor Nevuchim is a very important sefer in Machshava, and it's one that isn't studied too much anymore, but it's one that is very important. Most people, you know, see Mor Nevuchim because only when the Ramban quotes him in his Pirush HaTorah, and usually that is to argue, like in this case, actually. But it's a very important sefer. But it has to be learned properly. Without a correct understanding of what he's trying to do in Mor Nevuchim, you could be misled, or it could result in lots of contradictions in the sheet of the Rambam. You can end up, you know, thinking that there are two Rambams. You know, there's Rambam the philosopher, there's Rambam the halachist. So what we're going to try to see how to deal with this. So let's start today with the source of Mishneh Torah. Again, you have in your source sheets, this is from Hilchos Tefillah, Perek Tes Halacha Zayin. Mish Amar B'Tachanunim, Mi sharichin. It's actually interesting. When I read the Mishnah, I didn't assume that it's talking about in Tachanunim. I actually would have assumed it's in the Shefach. But the Rambam assumes it's b'tachanunim. Mi sharichim al kan sipur. Shelo lika cha'em al abanim. Meaning to say, I think the point is that God, who has mercy on the bird, as seen in the mitzvah Shelach HaKein, should have mercy on us. That's why it's in the petitionary prayers. Shelo lishchot oso v'espino b'yom mechad, or someone who says that God, who has mercy on the animals by instructing us not to slaughter a mother and young on the same day. Yirachem aleinu ukiyotze b'inyan zeh mishas kenoso. If you say something like this, we silence him in this tefillah. Why? Mipnei shemitzvos elu, these mitzvos, namely Shiluach HaKein and Oso Vespino, Gzeiras HaKasov Hein. So first of all, it's important that the Rambam is reading the Mishnah and Brachos is not talking generally about mitzvos, but actually these specific mitzvos Elu, Gzeiras HaKasov Hein, Ve'enan Rachamim. They're not acts of Rachamim, but it's a Gzeiras HaKasov, a Gzeira, as the Mishnah says. She'ilu Hayu Mipnei Rachamim, Lo Hayamatir Lanu Shchita Kolikar. Because if the pshat was that these were acts of mercy, so then the Torah wouldn't have permitted shchita. In other words, if the Torah was so worried about the pain of animals, right, ad kedei kach, that you can't take the eggs from under the mother, so then the Torah shouldn't have even permitted shchita in the first place. The fact that the Torah allows shchita shows us that that's not the reason for the mitzvah. So, and we actually saw last week that the Ramban actually makes the same point as well. So in Mishnah Torah, basically, what is the Rambam writing? That Shiluach HaKein is a chok. It's a mitzvah whose reason we don't know. While in Mor Nevuchim, he tells us the purpose, the reason for the mitzvah. Now, this discrepancy, I believe, it's also worth noting, he's not saying over here that mitzvos don't have reasons, which is actually the way he teaches the Mishnah in Mor Nevuchim, but rather these particular mitzvos are mitzvos that we don't understand. They should be looked at as chukim. So I think that this discrepancy is reflective of the different attitudes towards Tamei HaMitzvos that you see in Mishnah Torah versus Mor Nevuchim. In Mor Nevuchim, he actually does spend quite a lot of time in the third chelek on Tamei HaMitzvos, a number of chapters, and he more or less offers reasons for all the mitzvos. And many of the reasons that he offers for mitzvos are historical or biological or sociological. For example, in Mor Nevuchim 325 or 332, he talks about the reasons for karbanos, and he emphasizes that the reason for karbanos was to wean the Jewish people off of their idolatrous inclinations. The Jewish people, having left Egypt, were steeped in a world of idolatry, and this was something that obviously prevented their avodas Hashem. So God sanctioned karbanos, which in a sense are not the ideal form of service, to wean the Jews from that connection to idolatry, to allow them to at least serve God in this particular way. We talked about this last semester, I don't know if anybody was there, we talked about what the Rambam really meant here, which isn't so pashut, but for now we'll present it that way. So in the Mishnah Torah, in the Mor Nevuchim, he says that korbanos were, he gives basically a historical reason or justification for the mitzvah. The Rambam in Hilchos Me'ilah, in the Mishnah Torah, Parak Ches, Halacha Ches, I think the very end, says that korbanos are all a chok. So again, we have the same, more or less the same contradiction. In Mor Nevuchim, he gives us a reason for the mitzvah, namely in Shiluach HaKein, compassion for the mother, karbanos, to wean the Jewish people from idolatry. And in Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Tefillah, and in Hilchos Me'ilah, he tells us that these mitzvos are chukim. Chukim. So how do we resolve this? So one possibility is that a chok, that just because something is a chok doesn't mean that we can't try to gain some understanding of it. And that's what he's trying to do in the Mor Nevuchim. So yes, these mitzvos are chukim, and that's what he emphasizes in Mishneh Torah. But in the Mor Nevuchim, he says, okay, yes, it's a chok. We can't really understand it, but we could try to gain some level of understanding. I think we could add to that, that the approaches reflects the differing agendas of the two works. A halachic work like the Mishneh Torah has to be source driven. In other words, everything in the Mishneh Torah more or less comes from Shas. That's what the Rambam writes. You have to figure out actually certain things in the Mishneh Torah, maybe the beginning of Yesod HaTorah, the like, but more or less in a halachic work, we need a makor for everything. It has to be rooted, grounded in sources. A philosophical work like Mor Nevuchim can be more speculative. And a halachic work, to put it differently, can't ignore a seemingly uncontested anonymous Mishnah. So it presents the straightforward reading of the Gemara and Brachos. It can't speculate about the reasons for mitzvos. As we said before, though the Rambam offers Tamei mitzvos are speculation. And certainly it can't introduce historical, sociological, biological reasons for mitzvos, especially one that seem to undermine the eternal value of the mitzvah. So in Mishneh Torah, from the perspective of the halachic work of Mishneh Torah, you have to view Karbanos or Shiluach HaKein as a chok. However, in his philosophical writings, which aren't binding, and he's addressing a different type of audience, Rambam feels free to speculate about the historical, sociological, biological reasons for mitzvos. And knowing that the nature of the work and the nature of the audience, this won't lead to violating the normative law. In other words, he's not going to think that by people reading the Tamei mitzvos that they're going to start not observing the mitzvos because they think the reasons aren't relevant. But I think it's actually it's even a little deeper than that, which is that the reasons that he gives in Mor Nevuchim are often general concepts that don't actually address the details of the mitzvos. And certainly they leave open major questions. In fact, if you remember from last week, we saw the Maharal make that critique. They leave open questions. Let's give the example of Karbanos. The Rambam writes that the purpose of Karbanos are to wean the Jewish people from idolatry, but it doesn't address the question of why then we'll have Karbanos la'asid lavo b'mehera v'yameinu. The Rambam writes that, in fact, one of the reasons why we long for the coming of Mashiach is the ability to fulfill all mitzvos, including things like Karbanos. The Rambam clearly felt one of the Yud Gimli Kari Amunah is the nitzchias of Torah and mitzvos, and that we will bring Karbanos b'mehera v'yameinu. So he doesn't even address that question of, why would we even bring Karbanos la'asid lavo, if the, presumably in the Messianic era, there's not going to be a temptation for a polytheism. The goal of suggesting reasons for mitzvos that he has in Mor Nevuchim is met, even when it leaves us with glaring unanswered questions like the purpose of Karbanos la'asid lavo, or how do you explain the details of the Karbanos? And such a solution would be untenable for Mishneh Torah, because like we said before, in a halachic work, everything must fit. You have to deal with details. You have to deal with questions. So that's why, for example, in the Mishneh Torah, he says, well, we can't say that the reason is because of concern for animals, because that wouldn't, that there's a glaring question. Well, why does the Torah only have concern for the animals, but still allow the slaughtering of the animals? We can't say the reason for Karbanos is because of weaning the Jews from Avodah Zarah, because that leaves us with an obvious question. Well, why then are there Karbanos La'asid Lavo? So from the perspective of Mishneh Torah, he can't present this reason that leaves us with the obvious question. His goal, and therefore, perforce, it's a chok. That's our answer. From the perspective of Mishneh Torah, the answer is we have these kashas. We don't know the answer. We have a kasha. Seemingly, the reason for Shiluach HaKein is concern for the mother's pain. We have a kasha. If so, why dafka birds? Why dafka is, why is this aser but shechita's mutter? So our answer, chok, we don't know. I don't know. I can't answer the question. Business is a chok. The Mor Nevuchim, the goal, and we have to better define this. I sort of said the goal is achieved by offering some type of reason, even if it's incomplete, even if it leaves you going questions. I didn't tell you what the goal is. But whatever the goal is, the goal for offering Tameh HaMitzvos is met, even though it doesn't address the details, even if it leaves us with questions and the like. So that's sort of one approach we could take. But I think and let me just try to answer this question, and I'll get to your question, Jacob. It's still you know, it leaves us with well, I'll say it this way. What is the correct reading of the Mishnah? In other words, in light, despite what I just said, he's still giving a different taich in the Mishnah in Mor Nevuchim and a taich of the Mishnah in Mishneh Torah, right? What does this Mishnah mean? In Mor Nevuchim, he's explaining a Mishnah as well, right? He presents the reason, he asks a kash on himself from the Mishnah, and he answers by offering an interpretation of the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says that it's a chok, right? It's a gzeira, to be exact. So it has a certain meaning. It reflects a perspective on mitzvos that we don't accept. In the Mishneh Torah, he gives a different interpretation of the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says that it's a gzeira, it means because it's a chok, because we don't understand it, because we have a kasha on it, right? So what is the pshat in the Mishnah? The Mishnah presumably has one reading, right? One interpretation. And he's giving one interpretation in the Mishneh Torah and one interpretation in the Mor Nevuchim. So, you know, what am I telling you before I'm saying, well, yeah, the explanation for the discrepancy is his different agendas in different works. In the Mishneh Torah, he has one agenda, which doesn't allow for these types of speculative Tamei HaMitzvos. In the Mishnah, in the Mor Nevuchim, he has a different agenda where he's trying to give us some type of understanding, even if it's only historical, of the mitzvah, and they have different goals, and fine. But what does the Mishnah mean? What does the Mishnah mean? Right? Either the Mishnah means what he says in Mishneh Torah, that he's teaching us that these types of mitzvos are chukim, or the Mishnah means what he says in Mor Nevuchim, that mitzvos have no reasons. So assuming that the Mishnah only has one interpretation, you'd either have to conclude that the Rambam retracted, or he's inserting a intentional contradiction, which he says he sometimes does, actually. But I don't think that has to be the approach. I think the answer is that the Mishnah actually, the Rambam felt, if he gave us two interpretations, is that the Mishnah could be understood on two levels, both of which are true. Lamashal, just like we will often understand or interpret a pasuk on two levels, on pshat and on drash. And we believe that they're both true, they're both correct on different levels, even if they contradict each other. So it sounds to me like the Rambam is saying that we could interpret this Mishnah also on two levels, both of which are correct, on a halachic perspective and a philosophical perspective. And in Mor Nevuchim, he's presenting the understanding of the Mishnah from a more philosophical perspective, which he thinks is valuable. And in the Mishnah Torah, he's explaining the Mishnah on a more halachic perspective. And they could both be true. Now, I'd like to add one final point on this, and then we'll go to your questions, which is Rabbi Soloveitchik writes in a number of places that the Rambam's approach to Tamei HaMitzvos in Mor Nevuchim was one that's never really accepted. While his attitude in the Mishnah Torah to Tamei HaMitzvos especially was one that was accepted. And one reason for this is because in Mor Nevuchim, he's trying to justify the mitzvos from the outside instead of seeking to understand them from the internal or the immanent Torah logic. The use of internal logic in terms of understanding mitzvos rests on the assumption that the content of the law and even the philosophy of the law emerges from within the law. Or to put it differently, we have to look towards the details of the law to understand the mitzvos. In fact, the first, who also critiques the Rambam's approach to mitzvos, Tamei HaMitzvos, makes a similar point. And the Rav wrote that the great medieval Jewish philosophers, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi or the Rambam, constructed elaborate philosophical systems, but they didn't systematically draw upon halacha as their primary source. If you want to read a wonderful article on this point, Rav Tursky wrote an article called Towards a Philosophy of Halacha. It was published in the Jewish Action in the fall 2003. So it's almost 20 years ago. And you could get it on the Jewish Action website. Maybe I could put a link for that in the group at the end. But basically, what Rav Soloveitchik was saying is that to create a philosophy of halacha, that has to emerge from the details of the halacha, as opposed to superposing a philosophy upon the Torah. And that's something that's very hard. The Rav spent a lot of time working on that, although we don't have answers to everything. But the last line of his work, Halachic Mind, which is one of the Rav's hardest works, but the conclusion of that book is, out of the sources of halacha, a new world awaits formulation. And, that's quick. Okay, and that's really what he's talking about, a philosophy of halacha that emerges from within. So to the extent that Rambam offers Tamei HaMitzvos in the Mishnah Torah, there are Tamei HaMitzvos that emerge from within, which forces us to conclude then that a mitzvah like Karbanos or Shiluach HaKein is a chok, as opposed to what he's trying to do in the Mor Nevuchim, which is to say, and this also serves a purpose, though you have to be aware of its limitations, is saying, look, looking at the Torah from the outside, from what we could understand, what reason could we give for this mitzvah or that mitzvah? And oftentimes, at least the Rambam felt, that the only answer we could give from that type of perspective is by turning to historical or philosophical or biological considerations. Okay, that's the first half of what I wanted to talk about today. Are there any questions on that? I saw there were some hands raised before. Yes, go ahead.
Sure. Hey, so I have two questions. You hear me okay?
Please, yes.
Okay, good. So just number one, I was having trouble understanding the Rambam's Raya in, I think it was the Mishnah Torah, based on the fact that Shechita, if there were reasons for mitzvos and it was all about being compassionate on the birds by Shiluach HaKein, so then it would have also you know, apply to shechita. I mean, I've definitely heard my whole life that shechita is like very rational, and it's like the, you know, most painless way to kill the animals. So, I mean, and I think like ideally meat eating maybe wasn't so ideal. So while we're going to, you know, make it mutter to eat meat, let's do it in the most compassionate way. So I didn't really like really hear that as a raya for, oh, therefore all of, you know, mitzvos must be chukim.
Oh, wait. He didn't say all mitzvos are chukim. He said this mitzvah is a chuk, right? He's explicit. He says mitzvos elu, like we were medayek. Shemitzos elu gzer sakas of hain. Now, what you're suggesting is an answer. You're answering that dibratar keneged yetzer hara, like the Sefer Ikrim says about shechita, and shechita isn't ideal, and therefore, and the laws of shechita are just meant to minimize the pain and the like. So that's an approach you could take to shechita, and maybe it's, you know, it probably is the approach of, for example, the Sefer Ikrim, Rav Yosef Albo. But you can't ask a kasha on the Rambam from an idea that a teretz that the Sefer Ikrim says. In other words, the Rambam felt that this is a question. In other words, if the whole goal is rachamim, so then the Torah should have taken it a step further and asr shechita. And it could have. We could be vegetarians. You know, the Torah, there are a lot of things that the Torah restricts. So why draw the line here and not there? Now, what you're saying is, okay, I can give a teretz, right? Fine. I know you could give a teretz. The Rambam could also give a teretz, and he does in the Mor Nevuchim. What he's saying in the Mishnah Torah is that things have to be muchrach, right? And a teretz doesn't take away from that. So what you're trying to do is very good, and that's exactly what the Rambam tries to do in Mor Nevuchim. He might say it differently than you do, but it's to go ahead and give terutzim and give an approach to halacha and the like, which is somewhat speculative. And that's okay. There's a place for that. What the Rambam is saying, what I'm suggesting, is that there's not a place for that in Mishnah Torah. That for Mishnah Torah, we have to the extent that we're going to be willing to give reasons for mitzvos, so we need to, it needs to be mochrach. And that's why he says, okay, so then our attitude towards shechita, sorry, towards shiloh hakein will be, this is a chok. Not that it doesn't have a reason, chas v'shalom, but that we don't understand the reason. I should point out, by the way, another answer to this question of the stira, slightly differently than what I'm saying, though I think you're going to have to come on to some degree to what I'm saying, is in the Tosfos Yontif. The Tosfos Yontif and says that there's no stira, because the Rambam in Mishnah Torah is saying not that they are a chok, but rather that you can't say this in tefillah. In other words, the objection is someone who adds to the tefillah, al kanti bo yagi rachamecha, and that to say it in tefillah, it has to be mochrach, as opposed to, you know, when you're just giving tamei mitzvos, then it's okay to be speculative. Now, you still have to sort of say what we are saying, because in the end of the day, the Rambam is still giving two explanations of the Mishnah, even if you have that answer, the Tosfos Yontif. He's explaining the Mishnah one way in Mor Nevuchim and another way in Mishnah Torah. But at the very least, it's an additional perspective of why this is so problematic. In other words, we have to be aware that when we're giving Tamei Mitzvos, that these are speculation. And when you're offering, when you're speculating, you have to be aware that you're speculating. Okay, other questions?
I mean, I have a question that's more specific to this particular mitzvah,
uh-huh,
of shechita. Because Rambam writes here that the Torah was not written I think it's in Hilchos Tefillah Perek Tes, right? That the mitzvahs elu gzeras hakustavhein ve'einon rachamim. And he goes into the specific example of shechita she'ilu hayu mipnei rachamim.
Not the example of shechita, the example of shiloh hakein.
Well, he says explicitly there, lo hayu matir lanu shechita kol iker.
Right.
Right. If they were rachamim, we wouldn't be allowed to do shechita at all. Well, elsewhere in Hilchos Deos, Rambam writes and this is something that I knew before, so I'm just raising the question now. Mm-hmm. So he's explaining the mitzvah of being like a well-rounded person with the proper midos, etc. He says that we have to strive to emulate Hashem, right? Mahu nikra chanun af ata haye chanun, and mahu nikra rachum af ata haye rachum. Right? He's saying that there's a mitzvah, another mitzvah in the Torah, which says that we specifically have to be rachum.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if anybody made the connection between these two Rambams and say that maybe there is a latent halachic obligation to not engage in shechita, given that he uses the same term in both places and one has to be rachamim, and he relates shechita to an issue of being lacking in some level of rachamim.
No, I don't know. I certainly can't say what anybody else says. I can't say that nobody says anything. But I don't really see... To me, that's not a very compelling diuk, because the Rambam here does not say that that Hashem lacks rachamim, right? The Rambam says v'alach midrachav means not that you should be like God, but you should emulate His behavior, and His behavior includes acting with rachamim. Now, what he's saying, he's not saying that Hashem doesn't act with rachamim.
No, I didn't mean to suggest that he's saying that.
Just one second. What he's saying is that if the mitzvos of the Torah presumed this sort of rachamim towards animals, that would be incompatible with shechita. In other words, this type, you know, let's say it like this. The notion that lo tishchatu biyom echad, right? That implies rachamim level 7 towards animals, right? That we have to be so concerned with the animal's emotional health that we won't even slaughter a mother and a child on the same day. So if the Torah had asked of us that level of rachamim, then the Torah would not have also permitted shechita, right? It's a stira, because shechita, because if we were expected to have that type of rachamim, then that's not also compatible with the permissibility of shechita. The Torah does permit shechita, and therefore we can't say that the reason is because of rachamim. So our approach has to be towards this mitzvah that it's exeris hakasavhein. Now, if you wanted to argue that the Rambam thinks that shechita isn't ideal, maybe that's true, maybe it's not true, I don't know, but I think you need a lot stronger evidence, because he's not saying over here that this is a lack of rachamim in the way you're suggesting. Rather, he's saying that this level of rachamim towards animals, if that were the reason, is incompatible with another mitzvah. And since the Torah permits shechita, you can't say the reason why it prohibits osuv espinal, or it prohibits likach ha'im al abanim, is because of rachamim. Okay. So now I'd like to turn, as I said, to the second half, a totally different point, relating to Tamei Mitzvos, and a different question. So if you remember last week, we read the Ramban, and the Ramban unequivocally in 3, 4, 5, 6 places tells us that the purpose of Mitzvos is for us and not for God. We saw him quote the Pasuk in Iyov, Im chatasa matifal bo, rabu shalcha matase lo. We don't give God anything with our mitzvos. We don't harm him when we do averos. God is perfect. He lacks nothing. So there could be no other conceivable purpose for mitzvos other than for us. And as Ramban explains, mitzvos help us achieve spiritual perfection, emotional perfection, material perfection. They allow us to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be moral and ethical people, et cetera, et cetera. That's the purpose. That's the goal of mitzvos. It's all about us. Now I'd like to see with you a different Ramban. This is from Shmos, Perek Chaf Tes, Pasuk Mem Vav. And he writes over here, he's talking about the general mitzvos relating to the building of the Mishkan and the like. Yesh be'inyan sod gadol. In this idea of the Mishkan, there's a tremendous secret. So we're going to be talking about Kabbalah here, which we have to therefore be very, very careful. Ki kefi pshat hadavar, hashchina b'Yisrael tzorach hedyot, lo tzorach gavala. From the perspective of pshat, the shchina is l'tzorach hedyot, meaning from our perspective, and not l'tzorach gavala. Like he said, pshat hadavar corresponds to the idea that we saw in the Rambans and Sefer Dvarim, that everything is l'tov lach, everything is l'tzorach hedyot, everything is for our sake. That's the pshat. Not the literal understanding of the psukim. He actually saw last week the literal understanding of the psukim. You might think, fakir, they are for God, right? Karbani lachmi li'ishai. But that's not the pshat. The pshat hadavar is the philosophical perspective that mitzvos are for us. Aval, hu ke'inyan shamar kasuv, Yisrael asher b'cha espayer. But the sod, from the perspective of Kabbalah, is actually that we give something to God when we do mitzvos. As the Pasuk says in Yeshayahu, I, God, am glorified through Yisrael. In other words, the Jewish people, through their observance of Torah mitzvos, bring me glory. V'amar Yoshua, u'ma ta'aseh l'shimcha gadol. Likewise, Yoshua says, what about your great name? In other words, if you destroy the Jewish people, then that will be a chilul Hashem. Just like the Moshe Rabbeinu argues that that the Chil Hashem that would result in destroying the Jewish people would undermine the Kiddush Hashem that took place through Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that's the reason why, in fact, Hashem doesn't destroy the Jewish people. Salachti kedvarecha. Upsukim rabu bokeh. There are many, many psukim that emphasize this. For example, Iva lemoshavlo. Again, talking about the Mikdash. God desired a place to live, to dwell. Po eshev ki evisiha. I will dwell here in Yerushalayim because I've desired it. The kus of Haaretz is kor and others. So as we said, Pshat HaDavar refers to the simple or philosophical understanding of the matter in which mitzvos are entirely for our benefit, not God's. And this perspective, the Ramban clearly thinks is true, as we saw last week. He presents that idea without hesitation. But the Ramban also cites numerous verses that point to another perspective. God's desire for companionship. He wants us to welcome him in. Through us, he's glorified. This idea is sometimes called Avoda tzorech gavoa, as opposed to tzorech hedyot, which the Ramban said that the avoda is for our sake. It's l'tzorech gavoa, it's for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sake. If you want to look in Nefesh HaChayim Beis Dalet, he discusses that concept. And the question we have to figure out is, how could the Ramban endorse these two seemingly diametrically oppositional perspectives, right? They're totally different. Is avoda tzorach gavoa or is it tzorach hedyot? So let's consider two approaches to this. The first approach is this simple answer, but I think we'll see it's incomplete, and then we'll try to understand a deeper approach. So the first approach is to say, and this is actually a little bit along the lines of what we talked about last week in the Maral, is to suggest that there are two different approaches to mitzvos. The Ramban is presenting two approaches to mitzvos. The purpose of mitzvos from our perspective and the goal of mitzvos from Hashem's perspective to the extent that we could understand it. One perspective emphasizes that mitzvos are entirely for us because he lacks nothing. So from God's perspective, he gets nothing out of the mitzvos. They're clearly for us, to give to us, to be native to us. But if you have that perspective, or at least if you overemphasize that perspective, that could really turn you into egotistical spiritual hedonists, right? We're thinking only of ourself, our reward or our perfection. I will lack a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll be only takers and we won't be givers. We offer nothing in return. And certainly our motivation for doing mitzvos should not be the anticipation of reward, even as we know that reward will come, at least ideally. So other sources address what our attitude should be when doing mitzvos and serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the idea is that instead of serving God because of what we will get out of it, we should think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For example, the Gemara in Brachos, again, you have it on your source sheets, Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Ashrei mi shagadol batorah, shagadol batorah, v'amalo batorah, v'osen nachas ruach liyotzro. It's not just a song, right? So what are we saying? Osen nachas ruach liyotzro. That we give nachas to our Creator, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nachas ruach, right? So that's a reflection of the other perspective, that when we do mitzvahs, we're giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu joy and nachas, just like, you know, a parent gets nachas when he sees their child doing the right thing. So we give HaKadosh Baruch Hu nachas when we do the right thing. And this idea appears in so many places. The Pasuk says that wine is misameach Elokim ve'adam. It brings joy to God and to people. So the Gemara at the beginning of Kesem Varchim explains that I understand how wine brings joy to people, right? But how does it bring joy to God? This is the idea that Ein Omrim Shira El Alayayin. The idea is that we say, when we say Shira Al Hayayin, when we're Mishabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu using wine, whether in Nisach Hayayin in Avodas HaMikdash, or even Brachos Alayayin, like Asher Kideshi did me beten, so we're being Misameach Elokim. We're bringing joy to God. There's a Gemara, the Pasuk, is telling us that when we do mitzvot, we should appreciate. We're bringing Nachas Ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're bringing Simcha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's Misameach Elokim. Now, clearly, these sources and many others shouldn't be understood in an entirely literal manner, as though he needs our service and he's lacking something without it. But rather, they're teaching us how to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as though that were the case. We shouldn't just look at mitzvot as self-help, like the Ramban said last week, but rather as a means to get past ourselves, to build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a way almost that we could reciprocate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through doing mitzvot. We relate to him as a king, whom we bring glory, and as a parent, who we could bring nachas, and as a spouse, who we could bring love. All these approaches to these sources are emphasizing our attitude towards doing mitzvot. So that's the first mahalich. Now, the problem with this mahalich is, in certain sense, it seems like self-deception. In other words, if we know in reality Hashem lacks nothing, and we're not actually doing anything for him with our mitzvos, like the pasuk says, "Rabu pshacha matasalo," right? "In tzadakta matitein lo." So then, what are we doing when we say, "Oh, you know, we think we're giving nachas ruach to Hashem by doing mitzvos," but we know Hashem has no emotions; he has no, he's lacking nothing. We don't. So what are we, like, tricking ourselves? We're saying, "Well, you know, it doesn't really make that much sense." But if I really think about the purpose of mitzvot, that it's for me, then I'm just going to be self-centered. So let me, you know, make something up, right? So I think we have to try to dig a little deeper. Also, I'll tell you why it's shver. Because remember, the Ramban said that the sod hadavar, as opposed to the pshat hadavar, the deep secret, is that we're giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu through doing mitzvos. So the way I was answering in the first question is that's not like the deep secret, adarabba. That's like the, you know, the superficial understanding is we're, when we do mitzvos, we're bringing Hashem nachas, and then the deeper reality is that we don't give him anything. But the Ramban is saying fakert. The pshat is we give him nothing. The sod is that we give him something. So we have to try to understand this a little deeper. I know we're running late on time. We're going to try to explain a very profound idea, an idea that is very deep, but we're going to try our best as our session. The Gaon writes, we actually mentioned this last year, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the opportunity for us to give him something. Because without us, there would be no one to acknowledge his existence or his greatness or the like. And that allows us to deserve the reward that we'll ultimately receive. So the pshat is, the Gaon is saying, you know, we have some makoros that say the creation of the world is the greatest possible act of beneficence, of altruism, olam chesed ibanetz, the gift because he gets nothing back. And we have other makoros that, like the Ramban emphasizes, that he created the world so that we can give him glory. So it's not the pshat just that those are two different perspectives, but the pshat is that no, in order to be mativ, he created a reality in which we can give him something. So it's similar to the first approach we said, that on the one hand, God lacks nothing, but it's not just saying this is how we should think about it, but this is the way it is. In this reality that he created, we can give him nachas, we can give him glory, we can give him joy. Now you also have to be aware of a different reality, a perspective in which he lacks nothing and he doesn't benefit from our deeds. And we have to be aware of that reality for two reasons. First of all, because it would be heretical to say that he's lacking and he needs us. Also, because it would imply that he could be changed. The Pasuk says, Ani Hashem lo shinisi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't change. He's not changed by our doing the mitzvos. So we have to have the other reality, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unchanged. He's exactly as he was after creation, as he was before creation. But thinking of that perspective also can drive us mad, right? Maybe we should be aware of it for a moment, but if we think about it too long, we'll be harmed in the sense that we can't really imagine our non-existence. We can't comprehend how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe, but at the same time remained unchanged. So we're going to read in a moment how the Nefesh HaChaim presents these two ideas. But let's just explain why this is different than the first Mahalach we said. We're not saying that this is an act of self-deception in order to achieve some type of ethical goal. Rather, we're saying that it is a true reality. There is a reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created whereby we can give him something. And that's what the pshat is that the Ramban says it's a great secret. Because the idea that a reality exists whereby we could give something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something that's nearly impossible to comprehend. The simpler way of looking at things is the pshat hadavar, the non-mystical perspective of reality, in which he lacks nothing and mitzvos are entirely for us. But we do have some perspective on the reality. So let's look at the Nefesh HaChaim again. We only have 7 minutes. In your source sheets, I gave you four prakim in Nefesh HaChaim, where I think two in Perek Chelek Gimel and two in Chelek Beis, where that the Nefesh HaChaim explains this idea. Since we only have 7 minutes left, I'm going to say it outside to the best of my ability, But I'd really encourage everyone to try to read these prakim inside to get an idea of what he's saying. So the Nefesh HaChayim, first of all, to better understand this, we have to introduce a little bit of Kabbalistic vocabulary. So again, we have these two perspectives. The perspective of mitzvos are for him, and the perspective that mitzvos are for us. So the perspective, one perspective we relate to what Nefesh HaChayim calls atzmuso yisporach, his essence. God is as he is, unconnected with the world. And the other perspective is HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we perceive him. Again, Nefesh HaChayim is not endorsing any type of duality. There's only one God. And moreover, he's simple. He's not comprised of parts. But the Nefesh HaChayim is saying that our perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the way in which we relate to him is different than that which he is, right? And that's not duality. Right? My students might relate to me one way, and they see one dimension of me. My wife sees a different dimension to me and relates to me differently. My children perceive me in a different way, right? Even my younger children might perceive me differently than my older children. Now, those are different perspectives on me, but they're still just one me. I'm still one person. So Allah has kama v'kama with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's absolutely one. But we don't perceive that. We perceive him in different ways. And more importantly, we can't really perceive or relate to his essence at all. That's something that's totally beyond us. And so what we're trying to do over here is, and this is something that a lot of Kabbalah does, is identify the differing ways in which we perceive him and the differing ways in which we relate to him. So the Nefesh HaChayim writes that whenever we're discussing God, we're not describing his essence as he was prior to creation, because there's no name or no description that could possibly suffice to do that. If you just take a look at Shar Beis Perek Dalad on your sheets, right, he writes, Amnam lo shanu medabrim elav kaviyachol al atzmuso yisparach levad bifchinas heyoso mufshat umufrash kaviyachol legamre meholamos ke'inyan shayakodim habriya de'imkein eich netareyu chas v'shalom b'chol birchoseinu v'tfilaseinu b'shum shem. The kinui ba'olam klal. If we want to call HaKadosh Baruch Hu a name, then by definition, we can't relate to him as he is, because no name could possibly suffice. So let's try to understand that a little better. So Chaim V'Lajner is saying that, as we said before, Ani Hashem lo shinisi, the pasuk in Malachi, God is unchanged. So how does he create the world without changing? After all, the act of creation seems to involve a change in the unchangeable being of God, because originally there was just him, and now there's him and the world. And moreover, how do we deal with imperfections, even evil, and in the universe, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator of the universe, well, how do we explain evil in the universe? How do we explain Ra? And, you know, in Kabbalah, you know, the Pasuk says we shouldn't even deny Ra, right? Yotzer or uvorei choshech ose shalom, the Pasuk says uvorei es hara. So the way in which we could relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu post-creation, and the way in which we could even account for Ra, is by considering the various emanations whereby HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to the world without altering any part of his essence. The mashal, or one mashal that's often used in the Sfarim, like the Zohar, is that it's, you could compare it to the sun that sends forth its rays part of its very being without ever losing any portion of itself, even infinitesimally small. So the mashal that the Zohar uses is that these emanations, these beams of light, as it were, reduce in intensity the farther they are from the source, right? If we were to get too close to the sun, we would be burned up by those rays. When we're further away from the sun, then we can enjoy them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is unaffected by creation. And we refer to that as Ein Sof, right? And that never changes. But then we have these worlds, as it were, surrounding that. So it starts off with Atzilus, which is the world that Ein Sof radiates towards. And it goes lower and lower. We have below that Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. So now let's go back to what the Nefesh Chaim says in this sentence. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner is saying that when we refer to God as he is, unconnected to the world, we're not even referring to Atzilus. We're referring to the state above Atzilus. Even though Atzilus is fundamentally different than every plane below it, we're referring to above Atzilus. And from that perspective of Ein Sof, of above Atzilus, then mitzvos are not meaningful. Then avoda, that tefillah, isn't meaningful. From that perspective, so that is the idea that the pasuk in Eov is representing. So I'll just look a little bit in the Nefesh HaChaim how he puts it. Again, just going to have to pull out a couple of quotes and you'll read it later. The gam shelafi bechinas atzmuso yisparach bilti hischabruso el halamos ein makom l'torah u'mitzvos klal. From the perspective of atzmuso yisparach, so there is no makom for Torah mitzvos at all. Alzeh ne'amar, and he quotes all the sources that the Ramban writes. Alzeh ne'amar im chatasa matifol bo, im tzadakta matitin lo, umam yadchi yikach, v'chein ksiv im chachamta chachamta l'cha, ki la'atzmus adon baruch hu, kol ma'isa adam ha'tova hi imra einena, nogea lo be'etzem klal chas v'shalom. There is no impact on him. V'hu ma'amaram be'bereishis rabba, imras Hashem tzrufa. In other words, the mitzvos are for us. Amar Rav, lo nitnu ha-mitzvos el letzarif es ha-brios. V'chi ma'achdes lo la-kodesh baruch hu, mi sheshochit min ha-tzavar, o mi sheshochit min ha-orif. In other words, all the psukim in the Ma'amari Chazal that the Ramban quoted in Sefer Dvarim are the perspective of mitzvos b'nogel atzmuso yisborach. And that's what he says a little later. El kol kavanas libenu b'chol ha-brachos v'tfilos tzar shetia Atmos Ein Sof Baruch Hu mitzat hischabruso kirtzono yisparach el olamo. So we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu not mitzat atzmuso, but mitzat hischabruso el haolamos. Shemitzidam hem kol hatorim v'ashemos mischalfim lifol ulahamshich b'hem or v'ashpas kedusha me'atzmuso yisparach kefi his orurus hamagia leha mimaisei adam shel kol ish me'am segula. So that's what he's saying. So that's the idea of tefillos. Not to God as he is, unconnected to the world, in which he's totally unaffected by tefillah, but to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as he relates to the world. And again, it's not just that this is like a trick we play in our mind. This is a reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And in this reality, our mitzvos make a difference. And we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we become partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the creation of the universe, because by our doing mitzvos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Shefa to the world. And therefore, when we have these psukim that talk about our avoda being letzarch gavoa, our avoda being to benefit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're again relating to him as he relates to the world, not to his essence. And that's what Nefesh Chaim writes, that, you know, there's a big difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu as he is and HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we perceive him. How is he? From his perspective, he's memale kol almin. There's nothing besides him. From our perspective, he gives us place to exist. So if you take a look, again, this is from Shar Gimel, Perek Dalet. Kimivur b'kol makom b'zohar, shadon yachid ein sof, memale kol almin, v'soviv kol almin. So we have the stira. Which one is he? Is he memale kol almin, or is he soviv kol almin? V'hainu, shemitzido yisbarach nikra b'vchinas memale kol almin. Mitzido yisbarach, it's memale kol almin. And there's no place for anything besides him, because he's everything. Like he was kodem abriya, there's nothing else. Melochol haaretz kevodo, ein od milvado. Umitzidenu, kefi asher nitztavinu b'torah kdosha, b'inyan hanhagosa, b'torah mitzvos. Ukefi hasagasenu b'chush, the way we feel it, right? We perceive our own existence. We can't imagine our non-existence. And now from that perspective, nikra yisbarach shemo b'vchina soviv kol almin, shebechina memale kol almin, hu kavod elokim haster davar. And then he explains, ve'inyan kivadei emes shemitzido yisbarach gam ata acha shebar v'chidesh olamos b'rtzono hu memale kol almin, right? From tzido yisbarach, from his perspective, he's still memale kol almin. V'amakomos v'abrios kulam, there's no distinction. He's talking here about the idea, why is it that, you know, we don't learn Torah in a bathroom? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is memale kol almin. Yes, from his perspective, he's memale kol almin. But, and this is his critique against the Hasidim over here. From our perspective, we perceive chiluk. Ve'ein od milvado kimash mel mamish. So from his perspective, ein od milvado kumosh kasti lelmin mekos mefurashim uvishem rokeach. I lost the place. Lomar kodem atfila tahu ad shelo nivra olam ato mishenivra olam. You're unchanged in creation. Ratz lomar af shekvar nivra olamos birtono hapashet isbarach im kolzeh ein shum shinui v'schad shoschas v'shalom v'lo shum chatzitza machmas machmasam be'atzmos achduso hapashet v'hu. Who gam ata kikodem abriya shehaya hakol melo atzmus ein sof gam b'makom sheomdem ata. So, and he writes, that's from the world of halacha, which, like we said, distinguishes between kadosh and chol. So all that stems from the world in which created, in which he limits himself, our perspective of reality, but not Atzmuso Yisborach. So what the Nefesh HaChaim says ultimately is that we have to have both perspectives. We have to be aware that he's Memale Kol Almin. We have to be aware of Ein Sof Baruch Hu, that there's no difference Kodem Abriya and Achar Abriya, and that Ein Od Milvado Kepshuto Kemashmo. But at the same time, we can't think about that too long. If we do, we'll lose our minds. Chayos ratzo v'shov. Even the chayos couldn't comprehend that reality for more than a moment. They had to come back. And we have to come back to our reality in which we perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu not as he is, but as he relates to the world. And it's from that perspective that mitzvos give him something, nachas ruach ha'avodet tzorach gavoha. And again, it's not just a figment of our imagination. It is a true reality that he created. And that's the way in which we primarily relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's a soda gadol that the Ramban is saying. The way in which we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the most part, it is through a relationship. And it's a relationship that's, in a sense, two-way, that we give to him and he gives to us. And that's why we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of love, in terms of Hakar Satov, in terms of Nachas, in terms of all these things, in terms of being Mesameach Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is the perspective of reality that we have, and that's the perspective on mitzvos that we have. But we have to be aware of and appreciate that both of these perspectives exist. So I know this was a little bit, maybe I was trying to do too much in too little time, but it's very important, Yesod, and if you have a chance, you should really read these Prakim and Nefesh HaChaim where he develops these ideas very beautifully, which are really very, very fundamental ideas. So I want to wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and Bezras Hashem, next week we'll pick up with a new topic. Okay, thank you very much.
Shabbos, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Shabbos, Rabbi.
Shabbos, Rabbi. Rabbi, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So, I'm understanding.